Brian. Welcome along to this, the eighth and final episode in season one of Overlooked and Undercooked, a podcast wherein myself, Kyle Montgomery, and my friend Tim Batt, and Rob Schneider's attempt to shake up the TV show business model by self-funding, producing, directing, and starring in his semi-autobiographical TV show, Real Rob. We've just watched the eighth and final episode of season one, and we were joined by the wonderful Carlo Ritchie.
Hello, guys.
Hello, Carlo.
Is that Carlo Ritchie from Hosting?
That's the one. That's me.
Far out.
Yeah.
A real superstar in our midst.
Well, get that a lot. Get that. Yeah.
We've put our differences aside over a lovely helping of Real Rob.
It's what a savior to our relationship in many ways.
Oh, yeah. On the fritz.
Your relationship on the rocks.
Is it on the fritz? Is that a saying?
Yeah, on the fritz of something's... Yeah,
a bit crazy about on the fritz.
Well, I guess we all know different things.
Carlo, you were a little bit confused by this show because we didn't give you any context.
I feel like it was so well written that I could kind of pick up a lot of the backstory and plot line as we went through it.
Yeah, it's a dense, rich tapestry that they've
woven together. I was surprised to hear in the intro that he not only wrote it and directed it, but also funded it himself. I mean, that is... That really speaks for how dedicated he was to this project.
First question, do you have an overwhelming desire to go back and see the seven episodes to provide yourself with the context necessary?
Not one bit.
And you came in with an open mind.
Look, I came in this fresh. It didn't really need to do much to take it over the line, but... that was certainly... How long was that? It felt like...
That was 33 of our Earth minutes, Carlo Ritchie.
Well, 33 minutes can't get back, I suppose.
In the real Rob world, you know, there's no saying how much time passed.
Yeah, that was that wild time jump thing that they had through that whole episode.
You're a Dragon Ball Z fan, Carlo?
I haven't really watched much Dragon Ball Z.
There was a place you go to train in Dragon Ball Z which had a hyperbolic time chamber where you could kind of go in and it was, you know... 3 minutes, but you'd spend 7 years in their training.
The Narnia of martial arts training.
You got it.
That was
the main challenge of the hyperbolic gravity chamber was there was this Turkish delight everywhere, and you had to resist. And there was no.
And it was always winter.
Yeah, there's no greater. Yeah, I mean there were a lot of similar, and there was a lion called Aslan.
Yeah, yeah. There seems like a lot of similarities between Dragon Ball Z and Narnia.
Now I think of it, I don't even know what Dragon Ball Z is. I think I'm just describing Narnia. So the back of a cupboard.
Hey, well, Dragon Ball Z all takes place in the back of a cupboard.
Yeah, yeah.
That's correct.
And ironically, so did this episode of the show.
Way to get us back on track, Carlo. Can you take us through the beats of what happened in this show?
From top to bottom.
So,
Really chuck that mic in front of your mouth because it's very echoey in here.
So the thing that...
All right, easy on. We don't need to criticize the
cavernous
space. Yeah. We are recording from inside of a cave, of course.
Yeah, things have gotten pretty dire up top, as we call it. But we're hoping that someone gets these emergency broadcasts.
to go into
the show, I think... Did it open on him going for lunch?
Yeah.
It opens in the world of the sitcom that he's creating.
That's right. I missed a very important beat of the show. It opened up in the sitcom that he's created. He gets attacked by zombies, which happened there. Then there was someone who forgot his line, and Rob was pretty irate with that, may I say.
Well, yeah. Had you seen the previous seven episodes, you'd know that this guy's got quite a temper, and he's not afraid to show it unedited and uncut.
Yeah, look, I mean, in a nutshell, he'd lost all of his money, he was bankrupt, had to try and piece it all together.
Mm.
A delightful series of events unraveled from that point, and...
What was the resolution of the episode? I mean, what did we see? How we left?
I feel like you glossed over a lot as well. You went, there were zombies at the opening of a sitcom, and then it was broken. Here we are.
It all kind of chimed into a single white noise in my mind.
Can you hum the frequency of that ep?
It's quite an annoying noise.
I feel like that.
Can I say quickly... I thought that the sitcom was probably had the promise to be a more enjoyable. It might have just been variety, but it had the promise to be a more enjoyable show.
I wanted to stay in it. I wanted to see what was going on with those. What did they describe them as?
Vambies.
There was zompires. A zompire. There was a... Do you know what I did enjoy, though? When he was on the set of the sitcom, he's interfacing with the writer of the show. So, Carla, what you've missed is there's been a lot of network meetings and stuff that Rob had to go to.
That's
to
a real shame, because that's, for me, the best part of any sitcom is sort of seeing the...
Seeing the behind the scenes
process of which it was made.
And there was a lot of back and forth about Rob trying to get his idea for putting his life onto a TV show. And the network's note was to have these supernatural villains in it, the zombies and the vampires. And then to have that back and forth with the writer, where he's like, the writer's like, Rob, I know funny, and this is funny. Yeah. I was like, I want, this is good. I like this conflict.
Yeah, so yeah, the writer had a line which was, I was head writer on She Stole My Face. And that was a genuine laugh line for both Carlo and Tim.
It's a funny name for a show.
Describe that show, Carlo.
It's a kind of neo-noir horror film in which a damsel comes in to the detective's office and he goes, come into the light, and she steps in and has no face. Oh. And the laughs just keep rolling from there, let me tell you.
So, so she's stealing faces to cover her... The blank slate that is her face.
That's right, yeah. And this femme fatale's come in. It's like, oh, my face is gone. We got to investigate it. You got to bring me my face before the next full moon. You know, all the classic tropes of a good comedy.
Yeah.
It sounds immensely watchable.
It sounds very good.
The other laugh line that followed immediately after that that got both of you guys again. Tim, you're in a real laughing mood today, which I love.
Mm-hmm.
Was, you're nice people. I like you. You're tall, good-looking Jews. You're good for the tribe.
That's what I laughed at. You're good for the tribe.
You're also both blonde. I don't know where that came in.
Yeah, that's right. And that, I mean, I agree. Like, this is all still in the world of the sitcom. This was the closest we got to a well-made comedy in the season.
Can I try and defend my position of a laugh at that point? The rest of the show, every attempt at comedy is so surface level. It's like slapstick or... just crazy him being racist on a stand-up stage while doing a bad impression of his wife, which we know the impression is terrible because he's just showing a scene of his wife talking.
Yeah.
But with this, it was like an attempt at a, I don't know, sort of an inward... It was like a reflection on him and a broader sort of social commentary thing. And it was like, you're giving some other shit a go.
The sitcom thing.
You're sinking your teeth. No. The comment about tall, good-looking Jews, you're good for the tribe. It just caught me off guard. I was like, this hasn't been attempted before. I like it.
The sitcom presumably was Rob's attempt, because as we well know, this is him shaking up the industry. Obviously, after years of frustration at these sort of meddling network executives...
What level are you talking in? Because he's trying to shake up the industry with the show we watched.
Well, no,
but inside the world of the show, I'm
talking about the show we watched. But inside of it, the sitcom that he's made is so heavily compromised by these notes from network execs saying you got to put supernatural stuff in it. This is a cry for like... This is like he's providing the evidence as to why the show we've watched exists.
Oh.
Do you think that this whole film... Like that little film, this whole series...
It's filmic. It's a filmic touch of the scope.
Certainly the Maison scene was beautiful. But do you think the whole thing is smarter than us? Like it's all an inward joke and the punchline heaps of money in a box.
I don't know.
Yes,
nothing matters to me. Your world is rubbish.
He is obsessed with being rich in this show, which is why him losing all of his money in this episode was like, that was the biggest attempt he could make to draw some empathy out of the audience.
What sucks is that they didn't drill into him taking on his family who have bled him dry. He's had one previous mention of his family who he refers to from memory as fame whores and thieves.
He's always trashing on his family.
It's a crazy thing to put in your autobiographical series about your own life. And in this one, so his wife Max, she goes to buy some wine for her big opening night for the review show, and she can't pay for the wine because all the credit cards are maxed out, and this leads to Rob finding out that his family have been fleecing him for years. So somehow they got a credit card attached to his account. First of all, that's not a thing.
Yeah, the people are secretly using your accounts.
You can't go to the... I couldn't go to the bank and go, I just want to grab a credit card attached to my brother's bank accounts. Is that cool? Yeah, great. Not a thing at all. For good reason. This happens.
Yeah, yeah. It is an odd thing as well. I also like that he's never... in the years up to this point, checked his bank statement.
Not once.
But
he gets eight as soon years as it's revealed to
him, he can point him like, yes, that is one of my transactions. I can read that in a bank chart. You know?
Yeah. There was a good gag, actually. He was like, who bought a hooker on a credit card? Who spent this amount at something? Who spent $2,000 at a Whole Foods? Oh, wait a minute. That was me.
That was not a good gag, Tim. That was, you didn't laugh. I was right now when you laughed. You didn't even laugh at it in the show.
I think I'm being sarcastic, but I'm so browbeaten. I don't even know at this point.
No, that was sort of something within Rob's rule of fives, which we also saw again in this episode.
And again and again.
Yeah.
It was sort of like any scene was just like, just revert to that.
We could almost call it, seeing as the season lasts eight episodes, Rob's rule of eight. So the first one isn't funny. Keep going because eventually one of them will be.
I actually thought this episode, and Carlo, sorry to chip you out of this portion of the discussion, but no. I thought this episode compared very favorably to the rest of the season.
For reference, though, we had like a 2-week break. So yes. We watched six episodes in one day. And then like Grim. 1-2 weeks later. So this was always going to have an easier, a softer landing.
I have only watched one episode and I hope that I never watch another episode again. I don't know how this rates to the rest of the series, but I'm not really, frankly, I don't really want to find out.
Very well. I would call this potentially the best episode of the season.
Well, wow. So in the last episode of the podcast, also in the last episode of the show, we were speculating as to whether or not Ryan Gosling would appear. I believe Kyle Donnelly owes me $5.
I think it's me. I think I am the ower of the $5.
Oh, there you go. But so Ryan Gosling features heavily in this, or the idea of Ryan Gosling features heavily because Rob's wife is opening this male strip club, which she's been working towards all season, just toiling away in the background, mostly to provide context for Rob to make his vaguely quite outwardly homophobic jokes.
Mm.
And Rob's promised that Ryan Gosling will make an appearance for quite a significant sum of money.
$300,000.
So he discovers after being broke, he's like, well, I can't get Ryan Gosling. And so they are forced to scramble. And the way they scramble is, and you noticed, you called this at the top of the luncheon, didn't you?
That's right. Well, I said that there's a very active background of that homeless man. You know, there was a story there. There was plot. There was movement. Bless you.
Thank you.
And
I'm allergic to people saying good things about the show. The thing is, though, this show has been so unskillfully shot up till now that I think both Guy and I were like, ah, here's another thing they've fucked up. They got some extra who's hopped up on Coca-Cola, acting up a storm in the background window of this lunch
meet. To their credit, because they were never going to get Ryan Gosling, the guy they got looks a lot like Ryan Gosling.
It did make you take a second.
Me, did that guy look like Ryan Gosling. Didn't he?
Yeah.
He really did.
Yeah. And beyond that, he was homeless, which was a great source of multiple gags from both Rob and his assistant, Jamie.
It's certainly an area ripe for gags, you know, especially if you're making a show about being broke and not having any money. It's really the perfect target.
It's difficult to emphasize, you know, just how little Rob cares about anyone who isn't Rob in this show.
Carlo, Alice Sneddon, New Zealand comedian, asked us at one point when we told her about this show, do you guys think you might be punching down, whereby you make fun of someone who's at a lower status than yourself? This is literally an episode where they just offload onto street people.
Yeah.
People sleeping rough. Well,
accordingly, I'd like to ask you, Carlo, do you think, are we punching up?
I'd say you're punching up. Come on, guys. It's Rob Schneider, you know. He's the guy that in the films of Adam Sandler used to yell, you can do it. That's him. Of course you're punching up. You get to yell, you can do it in the back of Adam Sandler. You can just, and it's that improv, that line. That was improv.
I don't doubt it. The other thing he says in this, just before discovering he's broke, he's bragging how rich he is again. He says, I have enough money. I did 17 movies with Adam Sandler. Beautiful, honest moment in the film. Mm.
Well, the honesty comes next because his agent says, fuck Adam Sandler.
Yeah, that's as close as Rob will write jibes at Adam Sandler for other people in his show to say.
Exactly.
He can't risk it.
He can't risk
it. He's made 17 films. That's the bulk of his income.
Overwhelmingly. That is also like his fingerprints are all over it. He wrote and directed and produced this show. You can't feed the line to someone else and hide behind that. Like you haven't constructed that comment on Adam Sandler. Come on. Adam, you know how the industry works. You know how these productions connections get put together. That's Rob. Rob's telling you that. Adam That's knows, Rob's commentary.
Adam knows as well as anyone how to just muck around with your friends on set. It looks. This is the thing. So Grown Ups 2, it looked like they at least had fun on set because they were all friends who were just like making millions of dollars hanging out at a...
They were laughing at us.
Yeah. But real Rob, it does not... It's there's no like... Because it didn't the on-screen chemistry of Grown Ups 2 didn't necessarily work. It didn't make for an enjoyable viewing experience. But you were like, well, at least they had a good time doing it.
Here we go. Grown Ups 2 is a passion project without the passion. Real Rob is a passion project without the project. Oh,
scathing.
It's just someone who wants to do something who's unable to do it.
But yeah, he bloody gave it his best shot, didn't he?
I guess so.
Well, he got two seasons out of it.
Carlo, let me ask you this. What did you make of Rob Schneider's real-life wife who's on this show? Because I'm enamored by her.
Oh, yeah. She's an interesting character, isn't she?
She is.
It makes me fascinated to know if Rob Schneider is married in real life.
And that's her.
That's his real wife.
Yeah. That's why I say his real wife.
That's his real wife.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
The show,
she co-wrote the show.
The show, Carlo.
She co-wrote it.
Was written by Rob, Patricia, and Jamie Lasseau, who plays his hapless assistant, who's just a dumping ground.
Yeah, he really gets shat on, doesn't he?
Oh, man, does he. What? I mean, you haven't seen these other episodes, but he is literally, like, he is Rob Schneider in Rob Schneider's own show.
He gets a vasectomy and a colonoscopy on Rob's behalf. I can't even remember who it was on that episode, but they said the follow-up should have been he has to get a lobotomy before the wife gets one tested out. Imagine if the rest of the show was just a lobotomized personal assistant for Mr. Schneider. Imagine if that was the show from there on in. A guy who has no frontal lobe.
trying to navigate
the world of tasks. It's literally like laundry and stuff. It's like a mindless...
For the purpose to expand the bullseye that Rob has firmly pinned on Jamie's back. How can I create myself more opportunities to make fun of someone?
I'll remove
their frontal lobe.
Give a PA an IQ of 17 and then put them out in the world in charge of tasks for Rob Schneider. That's a show I would watch.
It's Rob Schneider finding a way to literally make fun of like mentally handicapped people in front of everyone.
He loves it. I reckon he pitched that idea. I reckon he did.
I think he did
it's
too.
It's not entirely unlikely. The other thing that, or you again, you wouldn't have known this, but what frustrated me is he abandoned all of the devices he had used in previous episodes.
Oh, so you're right.
There's no talking heads in this. So in other episodes, he uses like talking reality TV style heads.
Like interviews.
Yeah, they go down the camera.
Addressed down the barrel.
Also,
looking at you Ferris Bueller style.
Intercut with stand-up but it's not quite Ferris Bueller because it's like talking heads. But then another time he did break the fourth wall Ferris Bueller style. He also would intercut him doing stand-up comedy on what looked like a soundstage to no people. And then in this episode, all it was like, let's have a crack at pathos. Like, let's put some jazz music underneath what's happening and hope it passes as genuine emotion.
This is like a sitcom by numbers. Fill it all in, put everything in and see how
it
works.
I've seen this done on a show before. I watched Survivor. There's a bit where they talk to the camera.
Yeah, I feel like he's like, there's that great episode of Seinfeld where they pitch a show about nothing. What if I stretch that out to 8 seasons and put every single possible thing from a sitcom in the last 20 years in?
Most unsatisfying part of this episode, they name check a lot of famous comedians and don't put any of them in this ep. They talk a lot about Norm Macdonald replacing him on his own sitcom when he bails out and we don't get to see him again.
And you got a chuckle out of that too. Norm would be great for the job.
Oh, yeah. That was because... Yeah. So the network, Rob has one day on set, hates the show, bails, quits, calls his manager, and he's like, you got to get me out of this contract. And so he gets replaced. And his assistant is like, he would be great. And then he slaps him. That was the bit that cracked me up.
He loves to slap his assistant.
But that hadn't happened in an episode before. I was caught off guard.
The slapping wasn't a callback?
When he says, Norm would be great for the show. Instant boom. Not even a beat goes by. Boom. Gets slapped. That's funny stuff,
that
guys.
Funny stuff.
That's someone getting physically hurt in the
That got you in the mood because you got another real good chuckle when the Ryan Gosling lookalike was doing his dance and a lady goes to approach him on the stage and he just like puts his
kicked her in the face.
But it was never dealt with. There was never a follow shot.
No.
Never kind of finning out.
And everyone. I would, I would never want to see that in real life. I hate like America's Funniest Home Videos and fail armies.
I love fail army.
I hate those shows because it's just people getting injured, and I hate seeing people getting injured in the real world. But when it's like depicted on screen, fuck, it cracks me up. He just booted someone in the face apropos
and
of
all
nothing.
The other women continue to go wild. There was one, so in a previous episode, at the very mention, I think, of Ryan Gosling, they're being served at like a store, mm-hmm. some sort of, I can't remember exactly what the store was, but the lady behind the counter, they say the name Ryan Gosling, and she has a full-blown orgasm on hearing about Ryan Gosling.
That's the power that name carries, you know?
It's incredible. But so in this episode, there was one of the extras, of the 20 extras they hired for the big launch of the male, all-male strip club, a woman was grunting as though the suggestion of an orgasm was to arrive, but they cut away, like, they exercised some, I guess.
I have a question. So when you guys were explaining me the backstory of this, I was under the impression that was just like a one-off show, that strip show, but that is a club. She's opening a strip club.
Yeah, it's the first time we saw the club.
But yes, you're right. Yeah, it's the opening of the club.
That's the opening night of a club.
She now owns this club. Which will now keep going.
This is mind-boggling. Oh, God.
Didn't they make it all so obvious? Didn't they neatly catch you up throughout the episode?
Yeah. I thought that it was just a show that she had been preparing for.
You well like could be forgiven for that.
So
conclusion.
That is the opening of an all-male strip club.
Yeah. That Patricia owns and runs. It's her job.
And the premise of this show was the fact that they were bankrupt.
Well, that was this episode.
They've been rich the whole... they've made a real point of explaining how rich and famous...
Well, they're still rich at the end of this. Like, it's a great little...
Actually, explain what happens, Carlo.
Oh, yes. So, Rob and Patrice... Did you say Patricia?
Patricia
in bed. They're talking about how they're going to have to do some budgeting. They use, as you point out, the classic Rob Schneider rule of five. Different funny options. Getting funnier every one, I think. And
do you remember any of them?
Maybe
of
fly,
the show we just finished watching.
Maybe fly business class instead of first class some of the time. And I think we can all agree that's relatable humor. That
the very
is,
idea
that's
of it
stuff.
Is preposterous.
And then Patricia reveals that she has been saving. I don't know. How much do you reckon was in there? A couple of $100,000?
Hard to say. But yeah. Yeah.
Like those... I mean, they're notes of money. So they've got to be stacks of... the most that could be is a $100
bill.
You'd
say they're $100 bills.
So there's probably like $10,000 in there.
What is in there? How many notes are in a stack? You know, a traditional television stack of cash. How many notes are we doing?
I reckon you probably have...
Is it 100?
You'd have 100 hundreds.
So that's 10 grand per stack.
Gee whiz. There's 100... You reckon there's 100 in a stack?
Yeah,
I reckon there could be. It is paper, after all.
True.
Although, paper's heavier
than
you think.
How many sheets of paper are in when you buy an A4 block for your printer?
To that, I say, Carla, you know, how many cabs in New York City?
How many angels on a pin?
Exactly where my mind went also. This would be confusing for everyone who hasn't listened to this fantastic podcast series.
Hosting. I'd just quickly like to say, I don't know if you guys had a moment that jumped out at you, but I really enjoyed when that song... I think it was the song that Jamie started stripping to when Ryan Gosling went rogue, or homeless Ryan Gosling went rogue. It's by Ottawa. It's a song called Hands Up, Give Me Your Heart.
Mm.
Do you remember? I can't quite remember the tune now. It's gone. But it was...
How did you find that song?
Well, I remember the lyrics, and I googled. I'm going to put it... I'll play it briefly. Within copyright.
That's the one we were humming after the show, right?
Hands Up. Here we go.
It's this.
I thought this was just stock music for an idiot.
Hands up, put your hands up. Give me your heart. I don't know if that's the right version. That sounds like a MIDI sort of version.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
Fuck, that's a big track.
There's you loved it.
Well, like moments before, they'd used a cheap garage band version of the Drive soundtrack, because obviously Rob Schneider was running. Maybe that's why the 8th episode was about running out of budget, because this one.
Oh, because he actually did.
Like, there were no extras at the launch of the club.
The club was no so celebrity cameos.
It was a very small club. You'd feel uncomfortable.
We were led to be believed that this was a huge night for Patricia. This was like she was supposed to sell the place out, and it was first of all cabaret seating, which I get because of the venue.
Mm.
But there just wasn't the space for tables, guys.
Is it?
Let's get the chairs out.
I feel like it was a mistake in the shooting, because they could have got away with it if they had only shot from the crowd. But
true.
They really insisted on getting some POVs.
They didn't try and cheat it at all.
Yeah.
So you knew there was 19 women wall. In total at this opening night.
Small room too.
Tiny just little room.
There's literally not enough space in the bar.
How are you going to clear enough booze to keep this thing running?
Mm.
She's got to pay the boys.
Everyone's got to pay the boys.
And those boys will demand a princely sum, because they were very good.
Although one of them she's blackmailing with the possibility of sending him home to, I want to say, Russia.
That's just, that's, no, it's somewhere in...
It's either German or Austrian,
yeah,
I think.
But that's just her sense of humour, which she gets a lot from her husband.
No, I'm with Carl on this one. She explicitly said, "I'm not kidding." That's how you know a
and
joke
then
is over, guys.
Straight down the barrel.
Boom.
Bang.
Joke's over, guys. Go home, joke's
so this
over.
This is what is happening in our country right now.
Well, so, but did either of you guys have a moment that stood out to you in the same way that Ottawa's hands up, give me your heart stood out to me?
A woman got kicked in the face by a homeless Ryan Gosling. If there's not comedy, you know, maybe I need to go back to working for the tax department, because that tickled me pink.
They've been phoning you all this time, man.
If they want me back.
They're really keen. I don't know if I had a standout moment, to be honest with you. I think actually the fact that he drives a Tesla, I think it was quite a progressive message. In a show that is, I mean, pretty problematic.
Well,
just from the 33 minutes that I just watched.
What would you, if you could say something to Rob Schneider right now, what would you say?
Buddy, come on. What are you doing, mate? Pull your head in, buddy. Come on.
Would you keep
get in someone to help you write this thing, mate?
You said very, very coyly, you said during the show, who would have thought that the guy who said he would show up to say you can do it in those Adam Sandler movies?
Yeah, could not write a film. Could not write a series.
Yeah.
Not me.
Well, yeah. Fool me once. Shame on you.
That's true, though. I know you guys are being facetious, but as youngins, we thought Rob Schneider had it.
What?
And maybe he did have it.
He did. There was a 4-year period on SNL when he had some version of it.
He's a good performer. He just can't write.
I reckon.
Or direct or produce.
He's unlikable.
He is unlikable and he doesn't know it.
What was that standalone film he did where he, Bruce Bigelow, Mal Gigolo.
They changed his name in Australia.
make it a bit more tantalizing for the
juice. That's not a name. It's a drink.
No, down here we call them Bruce.
Bruce Bigelow, yeah.
There were three of those, I think. There was definitely two.
There were two.
He had European Gigolo. So did you were on board for that. You're on board for Deuce or Bruce Bigelow.
I mean, that was a big film in the
day. It was big.
People went to the cinema to see that.
The Animal was big-ish. Actually, The Animal wasn't as big as some of his other ones. The Hot Chick.
The Hot Chick was pretty
big.
That was a promising premise as well. Juice Bigelow, Male Gigolo, for those of you who are playing along at home, on a budget of $17 million, made $92.9 million.
Holy shit.
$17 million seems low as fuck.
Seems big. Seems big to me.
I
mean, I don't have $17 million.
That's a good point. Neither do I.
No one's ever given me $17 million.
It was directed by Mike Mitchell, a director who is otherwise very well known for directing the SpongeBob movie.
You can hear the Googling happening in real time.
Mm.
Which I like. This is like when people say, of course, as a crutch, as a verbal crutch when they're trying to buy themselves time.
Well, of course you'd say that.
No,
because
you are a piece of shit.
You go,
Rob Schneider, famous for The Hot Chick, Deuce Bigelow, and of course, all his cameos in the ad. Don't say "of course" is your verbal crutch if you're using it to buy time, because it's the opposite. This is the last thing in the list. You're buying time to think of a thing that was hard to remember. Of course, is the wrong verbiage.
If you're one of the people using that, Tim's really put you to task.
Yeah. What would you rather do, Tim? What would you rather that was said?
Bring it back.
Because of its honesty? It's raw, unbridled.
I just nodded into the podcast. Nod into the mic. Yes, guy.
What if you said, and need we forget? What about that?
And need we forget.
And lest we forget
all the sensational cameo. Lest we forget buys you more time and makes you sound more like sophisticated.
And
as
need
well.
I mention?
And dare we say?
dare we delve into?
But look, at the end of the day, Rob Schneider's out there trying his best. He's made a whole second season of this show, which you imagine.
I cannot believe that.
And I want you to try and predict what the arc is going to be.
Based on the clues you were given by the one episode you've seen.
They're going to take all of that cash down
to...
Which Patricia's been hiding away.
In a hat box.
They're going to take it to Vegas or Atlantic City. And they're going to try and win big, reclaim their fortune.
Love it.
That's going to get... a little bit tough for them, and they're going to be trapped to stay in let's say Atlantic City. They're going to be trapped to stay there. Rob's going to have to take up a job as a detective, and then one day into his office will walk this woman with no face, and then he'll look down the camera and go cut, and we'll reveal that the whole series was this series of She Stole My Face.
Whoa,
that is some meta stuff.
I love that. They left the breadcrumb, but it was so subtly strewn on the path that I didn't pick it up.
Well, yeah, you gotta be clicked in for the real Rob.
He's sharp, you guys. You pay attention to Carlo Ritchie.
Truly, something to look forward to. Have you got anything else to say on reflection, Tim?
I want to say this show shouldn't exist. And even though Netflix probably got told to... probably Netflix got paid to put it on their network in addition to not having to pay for any of the production. I still think they should have said no because it is... lessening the brand. I mean, from the color grade to the script to the edit to pulling focus correctly in a shot, they've failed on multiple counts.
I don't think it's so bad.
Carlo, do you want to plug anything while you're here?
Yes, please, if I could.
Well, you actually can't. It was a joke.
Damn it. One of your classic pranks.
Yeah, you've been done.
A pullback and reveal.
Well, in that case, then no, nothing to plug. Thanks, guys.
What just if you were allowed to plug anything? What would you say? Off mic. Or we'll just edit this out.
Yeah, just off record.
We'll edit this bit out. Yeah.
If you, I've got a podcast called The Bear Pack Podcast with myself and Stan Raskopoulos. We just improvise a 30-minute short play. It's better than the show we just watched. But certainly, how much better?
Who's to say?
Who's to say?
Maybe if you're lucky, Rob Schneider will do a podcast where he analyzes each episode.
Hopefully. That's the dream.
That'd be a big gift for you
guys.
That'd
be huge.
Any other podcasts you want to promote?
Well, of course, there's hosting that we do with this guy from New Zealand. You know him.
Good friend of mine.
Yeah.
It's a good guy.
That's a fun podcast.
And you've wronged him before.
Well, maybe he wronged me.
Who's to say?
But yeah, other than that, that's it.
That's literally it.
I listened to an amazing podcast the other day. It was a This American Life.
Okay, that'll do, I think.
So good.
Yeah, all right. We're just going to take that off you then. I'd like to leave you on the great words of Rob Schneider, spoken within the show Real Rob. He says, "I quit. I couldn't take the writing."